How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi there, Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm just dandy. How are you?
Living the dream. Each and every day.
I was like silent there. I didn't know what you did.
Living the dream.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Not much. Just got done with spring break. You just started spring break. But you know what? Since my kids are virtual, doesn't really matter.
To be quite honest.
You've been on spring break for a year. That was the longest spring break for you. Yeah. Forever.
I've had, for over a year, I think I've had less than 10 hours of alone time. That's so not cool for me. But you've got another case for us today, don't you?
I do, Jen. And let me just say, I don't want to say that my heart is cold and dead and black like my soul, but because it's not. But usually when I write these cases, I do it from, I don't know, like an onlooker kind of spot, right? So I'm there and they don't affect me. So in the 2.5+ years we've been doing this, this case, like I really cried. Like I balled up and cried. Yes, I don't know. And well, so we'll dive in. It's just, people are just the worst.
They really are. They really are monsters.
So here we go. You ready?
I should say some really are monsters. Not everybody's
bad. Just some. But we do a podcast about these kind of people. So I think that's a given, right? You ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
Finding love once in a lifetime's nice, but twice in a lifetime, Jen, that's even better. That is, unless you're featured in an Our True Crime podcast episode. And that's what's happening. Claire had been divorced a bit over 4 years and was busy working a day job as a teacher and a second job at a mall jewelry store. You know, just trying to make ends meet and raise her two blonde cutie pie boys named Joby and Jason. Now, at this point in her life, Claire's not really looking for love, but sometimes love finds us. Sometime during her work shifts, a man would come into the jewelry store to chat up a few of the employees. He seemed nice and he seemed like he had a pretty good life. His name was Ed Graff, and he was the vice president of the Community State Bank. Ed was a friendly guy who seemed to have a good reputation. Claire could tell he was a bit smitten with her, but she wasn't really looking. She really wasn't interested. She was just trying to get those boys up and out of the house, right? One day her phone rang and it was Ed. Claire would find out later one of her coworkers gave Ed her phone number. The two of them talked and they actually struck up a friendship, but that would soon change. Claire was unable to keep her head above water, so her father suggested that she move back in with him to save some money, and then, you know, she didn't have to work so hard. She could give up that second job and spend more time with her boys. She was happy and thought finally this would allow her to maybe get a little bit ahead. As she's packing up, the doorbell rings. She is shocked to see that it's Ed who's come to help her pack up. Now, at first, Claire was a bit taken back because she never told Ed where she lived, but the two of them started becoming friends, so she brushed her weird thoughts about all of it aside and welcomed the assistance from Ed. Who wants to pack up a house, right?
It's keeping me from trying to buy a new one, that's for sure.
Claire was adamant from the get-go. She only wanted to be friends with Ed. He would always acknowledge and agree, and yet he still managed to come around a lot. It was becoming obvious that he wanted to be more than friends, and if the frequent visits weren't a good enough clue, the loan payoff should have been. That's right, the loan payoff. You see, when Claire went in to discuss the loan she had with her bank, It seems that the entire loan had been paid off by a Mr. Ed Graff. Now, when Claire told Ed she could not possibly accept such a nice gesture, he assured her he'd just like to help. And, you know, don't worry about it. It's okay. I have the money. It's no big deal. As happy as Claire was to not be tied down to that monthly payment on the loan, and that was something that she had incurred during the divorce, I would have to say it's kind of creepy to have someone swoop in and pay off your bill.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it would be nice, don't get me wrong, but really creepy.
So at this point, remember, they're still just friends. He's kind of liking her.
You think?
Yeah, just a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Claire decides to give Ed a chance because he seems like a nice guy. While the fireworks are not immediate, perhaps a little smoke will develop, if you will. They begin to date, and Ed seemed like the safe, solid choice. And it was not long before Ed got down on one knee and asked Claire to be his wife with a huge, beautiful diamond ring. As if that's not enough, Ed tells Claire that, you know what? I've already paid for your wedding dress, and I put a deposit down on a honeymoon vacation for us. After being swept off her feet, literally, Claire said yes. And I think at this point, she was just hoping that, you know, it wasn't a love at first sight. It wasn't anything like that. But like I said, it was a safe, solid choice for her, and she had two boys to raise.
Mm-hmm.
After the wedding, Claire, Jason, and Joby move into Ed's home, where Claire is hoping for the finally ever after. But as we all know, Jen, fairy tales aren't real, and those fairy tales always have a villain.
She's got a bad stepmother.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Well, fairy tales always have a bad stepmother, right?
Well, they always have a villain too, right?
Mm.
Claire notices some small changes in Ed, and they began to start right after she'd moved in with them. But perhaps she was just overthinking it. You know, due to the hormones. That's right. Claire finds out she's pregnant.
Mm.
Maybe Ed is just being protective since she's pregnant. Or perhaps, because they're on our podcast, his true colors are starting to pop out. I think we all know which one is the truth here now, don't we?
The latter one? Am I going to take a guess and say the latter choice?
You're going to win the what?
The OTCP prize?
Yes, which is a bunch of nothing but a smile. 9 months pass and Claire gives birth to another baby boy whom they name Edward Graff Jr. Claire has her hands full with an infant and two young boys, but the boys seem to be excited to be a new big brother in baby Ed's life. Or at least that is what Claire thought. One afternoon, Ed was at work. Claire was feeding the baby a bottle and wanted the boys to take a turn. They had always seemed so excited. But today, on this day, the boys seemed kind of sad and frightened, and they passed on holding the baby. Now, Claire knew. She knew her boys. You know when something's wrong with your kid. She knew something was not right and asked them what was going on. And then it kind of occurred to her, and she said, "Did Ed say something to you about this and the baby?" She could immediately tell by the looks on the boys' faces that Ed had said something. Now, perhaps it's here, but Claire should have been tipped off that something was wrong. But, you know, we all do. We all like to think everything's right in the world, especially when you just got married and just had a baby. I think that's human nature. You don't bounce to the worst thing.
Depends on if you got postpartum or not. I always jump to the wrong worst conclusion, so.
Not me.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You don't?
Mm-hmm. I guess Claire couldn't really turn the other cheek anymore when she found Ed in the garage. She asked what he was doing, and he informed her that the neighbor's cat had been using their yard as a litter pan, so he's going to get rid of the problem. He was stuffing hot dogs with poison to leave for the cat.
Oh, what a nice guy.
Ding, ding, ding. Another red flag there, girlfriend.
Huge red flag.
Ed had a cruel side, and it was starting to show. One day, while the family was out on a swimming adventure, Claire noticed that Jason was struggling in the water. But Ed was there to help him recover his footing, so she wasn't worried at first, until she then realized Jason was struggling because Ed was holding him underwater. Claire is furious and yells at him to never do that again. Ed plays it off like, "Hey, we were just goofing off. It's all in fun."
No,
but you know,
that's
Claire
not fun.
Knew. Thank you. Claire knew that that was not fun for her young son, Jason. That is.
I had a neighbor that did that to me once when I was a child, and it was.
I took swimming lessons from a lady that did it to me.
No.
She would throw things under the water and then hold my head under till I could get it.
That is so wrong. That is so
terrible.
Wrong.
It was awful. I still remember it to this day. I remember the pool, remember the house, and I even know the name, but I'm not going to say it because I'm a better person than that.
Was that at Mrs. Mills?
Nope. Mm. Nope. No wonder I never learned to dive. No, I did learn to dive. I'm just still chicken. Claire's worried, wondering if she made a big mistake. Was this a huge mistake? What did she do? Now, Claire doesn't need to wonder for too long. One afternoon, Claire comes home from school, from her day of teaching school, and she finds Ed crying on the couch. Claire has no idea why he's at home this early, or, better yet, why is he crying? Ed tells Claire he lost his job at the bank. And by lost, I mean fired, because it seemed like good old Ed helped himself to some of that money at the bank. Ed told Claire he already had a plan to pay back the money because his mom said that she would loan him the money to pay it back, and Ed actually did pay the bank back. I think it was about $70,000 that he had embezzled, but he did get the money from his mom. Thank you. Did get she got that big ring, you know.
He got the money from his mom, you said?
He borrowed the money from his mom to pay the bank back so they wouldn't press charges.
Why didn't he ask his mom for the money in the first place?
Because it's not free. He thought that would be free, I guess.
Okay.
Ed was able to get a new job rather quickly, thank goodness. He was going to be working for a large insurance company as a claims adjuster. We know claims adjusters, right, Kiki? Now, Ed was learning all about the insurance, and one day, he kind of approached Claire with an idea. And I do have to interject here. I found differing stories on this. Okay, so I have it where Claire said that he did approach her, and then I've read some articles that where he did not, and she had no idea about this. Which way it goes, I'm not quite sure, but I'm presenting you with this as it is. So Ed presents Claire with this idea, and he says, hey, you know, my company is offering a policy in which you can take out a small insurance policy on a child, and then you keep it, and you cash it in, and you get it to help pay for college when the time comes. And people do that. My dad did that with my kids, too, I believe.
My dad did that to me, or for me, like, got a little... like Gerber Foods, something or
it's
other.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that much, but it's a little bit.
Right.
They both agreed that it was a good idea, especially since they now have three little ones and not enough for money for three college educations. And like I said, I have it where Claire said that she agreed to this, and then I have other statements that said she didn't know about it. So I'm not quite sure which way that goes, but we'll leave that to the listener. The policies were double indemnity benefits for accidental deaths, with the policies amounting to around $154,000, which would be about $369,000 in today's world. Now, we all know where this is going now, don't we? But let me just say, this is way worse than even what you may be thinking. You with
way
me so
worse?
Far?
Because I'm thinking pretty bad stuff.
Yeah, but it's pretty gruesome. Told you it made me cry. Little boys were just little blondes. They remind me of baby Hayden's. So cute. On August 26, 1986, the school principal entered Claire's classroom to tell her that she needed to go home right away, that there was an emergency at her house. And the emergency was, it was pretty bad, so the principal needed to drive her there. He didn't want her driving. Panicked, and I'm sure about to lose her mind and unsure of what she'd find, her boss would only tell her that there was a fire. They rushed to Claire's house. And as they pull up, Claire's heart drops. The Hewitt Volunteer Fire Department arrives to fight the fire. They also took color photos of the fire scene. Now, you got to remember, this is 1986.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taking pictures of the fire. The road is full of fire trucks and emergency vehicles. All the neighbors were outside standing and staring, many of them gawking. A lot of them were crying. Claire races to Ed to demand to know where the boys are. Ed holds her back and tells her that the boys are gone. Claire, devastated, runs past Ed right into the arms of a fireman. He grabbed Claire and told her it was best if she remembered the boys as they were, because it was too brutal. They were totally unrecognizable. And that's where I started crying, because that's, I can't even imagine.
No, that's... Mm-mm.
The shed that, in the backyard... Mm. The shed in the backyard had either exploded or caught fire and went up way too fast to rescue Jason or Joby. The boys, age 8 and 9, died within the shed. They never had a chance to escape the raging inferno.
The firemen were able to save a few items from the fire to give to Claire. Most of the items were the boys' schoolwork and books. And here's where I have to say that schoolwork and books, those were last seen in their bedrooms.
Oh, really?
Just hold on to that thought. Authorities ruled the fire accidental, and they believed Jason and Joby were out there in the shed playing with matches. Now, it was right after this report was released, Ed hired workers to come in and take away what was left of the burnt-out frame of the shed. In destroying the shed, all additional evidence was also destroyed. The next morning, after Ed had that shed destroyed, he went outside and placed a water hose on the burnt grass to try to get the grass to grow back so that Claire wouldn't have to look out at the burnt grass day in and day out, you know, because the boys were gone and he didn't want it reminding her of that. Her children are dead and he thinks he's going to go grass and everything will be fine.
No, but I kind of get what he's saying. He wants to get rid of all
it's a day later.
It is a day later. I get that.
Do you think that you would ever, like, there would never be a day?
She will never get over it. But the sooner you get rid of all the burned, charred evidence, it might help not to be a reminder. I'm just saying that I understand it didn't impact me as much as it impacted you. But he is a horse's ass. That there is other things that needed to be done besides that.
With a few days behind them, a few days since the boys, this is how quick this is going. This is my whole point. They needed to make funeral arrangements for the two boys. And Ed, given that he is, you know, cheap, he suggests that they should just save money and put both the boys in the same casket because, you know, they're little.
No, no.
Why buy two?
Now, see, that's more frustrating than the grass thing. No, that's...
It's all together. Claire, of course, flips out and makes sure that each boy gets a nice casket and service. Now, Ed's worried about how they will pay for this. Now, you know, he goes ahead at this point and calls the insurance company to get to collect on that claim for that insurance that he took out on them. It's been, you know, a long time. Yeah, 3 days. 3 days since they died in this fire. And he's trying to correct the grass and make that grow better. And, you know, why would we ever... They're little. Let's just toss them in the same casket. Why spend money on two?
Nope.
On the day of the service, Claire was beginning to have her suspicions, and Ed made sure Claire would not speak to anyone without him being right by her side. After the service, Ed told Claire that he thought, you know, with Jason and Joby gone, I really thought it'd bring the two of us closer. This is them having people at their house, and he grabs her shoulder and tells her that.
No. No, talk about your red flags.
Claire, of course, is like, oh, hell no, uh-uh. So what was maybe once just suspicions are now becoming clear. Claire goes to stay with her brother for a while, and by a while, I mean she's like, yeah, see ya, mofo, I'm never coming back. Now, she left the baby, little baby Ed Jr., with Ed, but she knew that he truly loved his own child and would never hurt that child. Her game plan was basically to get out of the house and get away from him, and then she would get the baby back into her custody when she could, after the truth came out about what happened to Jason and Joby. And, you know, at this point, that she was not the only one who thought something was amiss. After the boy's death, family and friends began to question some of Ed's behaviors. You see, right after the boys passed, he did call the insurance company and try to get those policies cashed. And they didn't really need the money. That's a little odd, but okay. It's not unheard of. Now, what was strange was that Ed had purchased the boys some clothes for school because, you know, school was happening. This is August. School's happening in a few weeks prior to them passing away. He would not let the boys take the tags off because, yeah, that's right. He went and returned the clothes after they had passed away. He also refused to buy more cereal for the boys when they ran out, you know, because... Why buy their favorite cereal if they're not going to be there?
Mm-hmm.
These are all the things you look back on and think, right. Something's not right. Claire is clear. Ooh, that's a hard one. Claire is clear about one thing. She wants her baby boys exhumed and examined to find out just what happened to Jason and Joby. And what happened was even worse than you could imagine. The autopsy reveals both boys had smoke and soot in their lungs and mouth, indicating that they were alive at the start of the fire. The position of their bodies indicates that they were not alert at the time of the fire, as they were in a lying down position as if sleeping or knocked out.
Unconscious, exactly.
It did not look like they had tried to escape the fire. Authorities believe that the boys were knocked out or left incapacitated and then placed in the shed before the shed exploded in flames. The shed, by the way, and I think I forgot to write this down, was locked from the outside.
Oh,
10 months after the fire, Ed Graff was finally arrested. During the trial, prosecutors brought in two arson experts who used photographs of the scene to describe how the blaze started. Both testified that burn patterns on the shed floor indicated that someone had intentionally started the fire with an accelerant. They told the jury that because the boys were found on their backs, they must have been unconscious at the time of the fire. Also, they mentioned the door latch was found in the closed position, which is what I just said. It was locked from the outside. The experts believe this evidence points to the fact that Ed Graff had knocked out his two young stepsons, dragged them into the shed, and locked the door before setting the fire. Now, defense attorneys tried to counter the forensic testimony. Their expert was, not very well spoken, I guess, as the prosecutors and the jury believe the prosecution experts more than the defense expert. Ed was convicted of capital murder for the death of the boys and was sentenced to life in prison for this crime. Ed was imprisoned in Alfred Hughes State Prison in Gatesville, Texas, though he still denies he had anything to do with the death of the boys. Ed's biological son with Claire would occasionally come with his grandmother, which was Ed's mom, to visit Ed in prison. But as the boy grew, so did his suspicions. He quit coming to see his father in prison because he believed his father was responsible for the deaths of his stepbrothers. He also eventually changed his name, which I know, but I'm not going to tell you because that's just not nice. Although it wouldn't bring the boys back, Claire was happy that justice was finally done and had some peace knowing this. Thank you for the pregnant pause. I appreciate that. Until almost 2 decades later. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that technology is constantly changing and advancing, and sometimes with the advancement, a new technology comes along and changes how things are done in regards to a criminal investigation. This was just the case in regards to the fire science that helped convict Ed Graff. The Innocence Project of Texas became involved in the case and petitioned for his retrial on account of faulty investigations.
Really?
Yeah.
That, okay.
Here's
I guess they make mistakes too, right?
Here's where we get into this. So in the original trial in 1988, a fire expert from the state fire marshal's office testified that the burn patterns on the shed indicated it was arson, stating that the charring pattern was called an alligator pattern, and it was present, and this indicated an accelerant, such as gasoline, was used and then would eventually make that pattern as the shed burned. Now, the expert also testified that both boys had been found dead on their backs, indicating that they had not been conscious when the fire started, because people that are conscious, this is what they believed in 88, people that are conscious during a fire would usually huddle up together, and they're usually found when they pass away or they get in there after the fire. They're kind of huddled together, hunched together, usually in a corner, and they're sitting up against a wall, right, looking at the fire.
I would think that would be correct, right?
Correct.
You would go with somebody that you loved. Yeah.
Yep. And so they believe this is why they had to be passed out. As the years passed, fire science had concluded that people often die on their backs in a fire, and that doesn't necessarily mean they were unconscious, that their body relaxes or they lay down on the ground to try to get lower and get more oxygen, because as we know, smoke rises. Also, fire science has proved that that alligator burn pattern can be caused by a flashover. This is why I love our podcast, because then I go down these rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. What's a flashover? A flashover is, quote, a transitional phase in the development of a compartment fire in which surfaces exposed to thermal radiation reach its ignition temperature more or less at the same time, and fire spreads rapidly throughout the space, resulting in full room involvement or total involvement of the compartment or enclosed area. Thank you, firerescue1.com. That's where I got that from.
Okay.
But if you have a flashover, and this is why I didn't include this in there. If you are in a room with a flashover, you have approximately 7 to 10 seconds to get out or you will die. That's it.
Wow.
Like if you're sleeping, you know, that could be your 7 seconds.
Because it just takes all the oxygen out of the room, right?
And it just goes, whoosh, like it all goes up at the same time.
Yeah. That's what happened in the Chicago or the New Orleans and the upstairs. Yep. Upstairs lounge.
And this is unlike, this is a little lesson for you. Unlike the rollover is the dancing flames that you see on the ceiling because it creeps up the side and then across the ceiling. That's a rollover.
Gotcha.
I found all of this so fascinating.
Look at you with
really
all the fire terms.
I do. I'm telling you.
You could be a volunteer firefighter now.
I'm going to. Except that it'd have to work around my schedule.
Yeah, that's true.
I think
that'd be kind of hard for them to do.
In 2014, Ed Graff was awarded a retrial based on the development in the study of fire forensics. In 1988, when he was originally arrested, investigators used photos of the burnt-out shed to determine just what happened when it went up in flames. But they believe they were mistaken at the time. At the start of the second trial, Ed maintained he had absolutely nothing to do with the death of Jason and Joby. As the case was winding down, a shocking statement was about to come out of Ed Graff's mouth. Ed Graff stood to face the judge and he spoke, "I, Edward E. Graff Jr., am pleading guilty because I am guilty of and judicially confess to the offense of murder." In the confession that he signed, the document went on to state, "I did then and there intentionally and knowingly cause the death of an individual, namely Jason Graff, by manner and means unknown to the grand jury, or by preventing his exit or escape from a burning building in which Jason Graff suffered asphyxiation due to exposure to smoke or carbon monoxide or heat or fire, or where Jason Graff suffered thermal burns from exposure to heat or fire resulting in death." A similar paragraph repeated that same thing, only Joby's name was in the place of Jason. Finally, Ed Graff admitted to what he did to those two precious little babies over 26 years ago.
He is a monster. I wonder what the Innocent Project thought of that.
I'm glad you say, Jen, because of course I'm not done. Because, you know, I like the dramatic pauses, of course. However, as with all things concerning Ed, there's a catch. In this plea deal, and due to a law the governor of Texas had just instituted, Ed Graff could be eligible for parole because he admitted his crime. There was a little bit of prison overcrowding at this time. Yep, that's right. So he was sentenced to 60 years in prison, but because he had already served 26 years in prison, he was granted parole. Now, this was just days after he stood in court and admitted to killing two little boys. That's right, he walked. After release, Ed Graff was at first under the supervision of the state, and he had to wear an ankle monitor to keep control of where he was at all times. But in February of 2018, the parole board allowed him to remove it. He still lives in Texas, and yes, I know the city, but I'm not going to say it. And he has a job, and I'm not going to say that either. He is about 68 years old. And let me just point out that is 60 years longer than those sweet little blonde-haired boys lived. And that is the story of Jason and Joby Graff.
Wow. Is he under witness protection new name? Nothing? He's just
still
out there?
Yep.
God love those overcrowded.
I just don't get that.
Jails filled with, you know, people
I just
that
can't
have
imagine
marijuana.
That, you know, to have a baby and to love them. And he did love his baby. The son
is.
His biological child changed his name and has absolutely nothing to do with him.
Well, duh, would you?
No. But you'd think if you had that capability to love somebody, how could you ever hurt those two boys? And then he said,
he liked money better. Those boys meant nothing to him. He only wants the money.
Nope. I think I mentioned that they had schoolwork and stuff in there. And that's because he didn't want that stuff in the house. So he had been placing it in the shed, like when the, You know how little kids come home and they're like, look what I made. And it's like the 1500th piece of terrible art from an 8-year-old. And you're like, oh my gosh, I love it. And you hang it on the fridge and then you hope that they don't notice it when you slyly remove it. Well, he didn't want that in the house. So he was taking it out and putting it in the shed. That's the only reason the firemen were able to save that, because he just didn't want to be bothered with that in the house. Because he, you know, I thought it'd bring us closer.
What? Yeah. Son of a bitch.
So Claire, by the way, is now a retired teacher. She still lives in Texas as well. And God love her. I don't know. I don't know how you move on with your life from that. He also did say that he not only killed the boys, he wished he would have killed her too.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. And he's free?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Walking around. 68.
Well, the good news. Well,
there's no good news. He's lived 60 years longer than those boys. 60 years. That's a lifetime. So,
yeah, I still can't believe they let him go.
No. That case was really disturbing to me. I just don't. And it's just not fair. And I don't understand how people in this world live like that. I don't understand how you can get up in the morning and put your left sock on and your right sock and then your shoes and you get ready and you live your day after you know that you just killed two little babies.
I don't understand how he was let go from prison with all of that. I mean,
overcrowding, and he admitted it.
But still, no, I know. That's what I meant. Overcrowding. You would take the lesser, I would think. I mean,
he served 26 years. On drug, but still.
So? But he killed two little boys.
I know.
He murdered them.
And he should be done. He should be serving life. Period.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yes.
He shouldn't. 27 years is not anything close to what he
deserves. You know? That one.
I would have gone for the death penalty. He is in Texas. Hello.
Yeah, but he admitted his crime, and I guess that was part of the deal to get him out. I have no idea. I don't think it's fair. I just don't think it's fair. But what do I know? What do I know? Just me.
Well,
All right, Jen, so that was my case. What's going on with you?
Got my corona vaccine. First one. Mm-hmm. Very excited with that. You got yours, too.
Did they give it to you with the lime? Ba-dum-bump.
Ba-dum. No, actually, that would have been better.
Probably would have been.
Easy thing to do.
Although you might be having a little after.
Yeah, I've been having headaches. I always get headaches, but it's been a week now for a headache. Constant. We did have a huge storm last night, so I was hoping that would be since, you know.
You still have it today, though.
Usually, I do. Usually with, and I'm having really cloudy brain, too, because of the headache. But usually when the air pressure changes, I get headaches. So we had a big storm yesterday. So I was hoping that maybe some of it, but no. But anyway, other than that, I did watch the Allen versus Pharaoh on HBO about Woody Allen's alleged rape of his daughter, Dylan. You watched it too.
You told me to watch it. And I can't stand to think of him or look at him or anything now.
It's awful.
I wasn't a big fan anyway. I just wasn't, because to me, his shtick is kind of the same thing over and over. The neurotical New Yorker. Oh, look at me. I just don't think he's that funny. I really don't. It's the same thing over and over and over. But now I really don't like him.
Well, one of my favorite movies is Radio Days, which is by him. Mia Farrow's in it. Seth Green was like an itty bitty boy when he was in it. But now it's horrible. I totally believe Dylan, the daughter. If you haven't watched it, you need to go see it. Woody Allen uses his white male privilege, I guess, if you want to call it, and his wealth to get out of any prosecution. The man has funds beyond any of anything that we could obtain. But it's so frustrating. So I was like screaming. And of course, you know, my husband's sitting there and he's not really paying attention. He's like, what's going on? And I tried to explain it to him. And he's just like, well, you knew that would happen. You knew this is what happens all the time. The rich men get away with everything.
Mm-hmm. Just rich people in general. But yes.
But he's powerful. And New York pretty much swept it under the rug because he was bringing in so much revenue to the state.
And he's their golden child.
The city should be. Yeah. So it's
terrible.
I was pissed.
Yeah.
I'm still pissed. Yeah. And even looking at the man makes me nauseous.
Ugh, I can't stand it either.
What they put Mia through is...
Well, they made her seem like the crazy woman.
That she was crazy. And even... About. And it was so funny because I was watching it. The first thing my husband said was, well, isn't she crazy?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. He made people think she was crazy, and she's not. And here it is, all these years later, you think she's crazy because of what his PR company and what he mm-hmm. did. Mm-hmm.
And not to give anything away, but to me, if you, for instance, at first didn't want to believe Dylan, his daughter, the takeaway for me was he marrying his adopted daughter. And it's not even that. Like, when they got married, she was of age. But she wasn't of age when they started. And that, to me, is that's all I needed to know. So
no, I mean, and he would go on saying, oh, she was in college when it all happened. It was. No, she was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was college. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is just so frustrated. And the fact he was obsessed with Dylan, and the fact that he didn't want a baby, but then said, but if you get a white blonde baby... blah, blah, blah.
Had to be a girl. Yep.
Yeah. And can we just talk about Ronan Farrow for a second?
Mr. Blue Eyes.
There's no way he's Woody's son.
No way.
There is no way in hell.
I'm sorry, but he is.
He is the spit image of Sinatra. He really is. There's good old Frankie with those blue eyes. And
you have to preface that with saying that there's always been rumors that Ronan was rumored to be Frank Sinatra's child, not...
Well, she was married to Sinatra, and...
On and off, but she wasn't married to him at this time, but she was, like, going on and off.
No, she was with Woody, right. Mm-hmm. But no, there's no way he's Woody's son. Yeah. No way. You look at him, and the first thing you think of is Frank Sinatra, even if you don't know the backstory on it.
He's got super blue eyes, and he's handsome.
And he looks pretty much like a fuller-faced version of the famous Frank Sinatra mugshot when he was arrested in Hoboken.
Yeah.
Or Hoboken?
Hoboken. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Hoboken. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, what else you been watching?
It started the new season of The Good Girls.
You like it?
Is it CBS? I love it. I love all the women that are in it. Christine Hendricks.
Yeah,
especially
she's adorable.
She was in The Mad Men. She's adorable. It's a good season. I always like the cliffhangers. It's probably the last season, though.
The College Scandal thing on Netflix. Did you watch that? Did we talk about that
yet?
No. You didn't
watch
that? The College Scandal with the rich people that bought their ways to college.
No. I haven't watched that. I did watch the first episode of the QAnon.
Oh, no, I didn't watch that.
Thing. Mm. And that I just can't do it because it's so ridiculous. Some of the things that are going on as...
I just want to know,
these,
like,
conspiracy theories.
Is this theorist, like, is he a 14-year-old kid playing video games in his room? I swear to God, that would be the be it all end all to.
They think he's some man, like, in his 40s that lives in the Philippines.
Like, he's a Filipino farmer or something.
No, he's not Filipino. He's American. But he's a pig farmer in the Philippines that lives in the. Yeah. John Watson or something like that, I believe.
Why don't they out him?
But they come up with all these... My husband put it perfectly. He's like the psychic John Edwards. And if you believe in psychics, you can go forward a few. But John Edwards, not really sure if he's a real psychic, basically just throws out a lot of shit and see what sticks, what doesn't stick. He just goes on and says, you know, I mean, and then the rest is correct. He's like, I told you this would happen. I told you.
Yeah, and if you say enough things...
Something's going to stick, right?
It's going to happen.
But, like, now the whole thing is, you know, the big freighter ship that's stuck in the Suez Canal?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Supposedly the name is, like, Evergreen. Oh. The name of the ship is Evergreen. Mm-hmm. And supposedly that was Hillary Clinton's...
Code name
for Secret Service. Mm-hmm. And all that's in the shipping containers are filled with children.
I was just going to say that.
And, yes, and it's Tony Podesta's. And then behind it, they're stuck with them is a Russian warship, and the Russian warship were almost on their way to get the Hillary Clinton and free the children. It's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And
is Putin
I don't
on
understand
that ship?
I don't. Could be. I don't know. But I don't get that thought process. I mean, to
not
me, that's,
to get political, but.
Not to get political at all, but I don't understand how people would believe it. And to believe that John F. Kennedy Jr. is still alive and is going to come back to
he is John.
Claim
he's going to be a guest
president.
On our podcast next week. I didn't want to tell you.
I have a hard time believing it, and maybe it's the Missourian in me, but I gotta see it to believe it type thing. Show me state.
Yep.
Show it to me. I just find if it's too good to be true, it's not true. You know?
Yep.
I don't understand it. And so I was like even having a hard time following these things because of their beliefs. I can't even talk about it.
And on that light note, do we have any promos?
So much. I don't actually have a promo for this.
Oh, we don't?
But I do want to say, I don't have a promo. I do want to say, if you're not listening to Jules, Dr. Jules at Riddle Me That, of her big in-depth series of baby Jacob Landon, you're totally missing out on it. It is very interesting case. Actually, it's the brother of another podcaster, Eric, of Two True Consequences. It's his brother was killed in the 80s, I believe, by his stepfather. Oh. And his stepfather has never been charged. Oh. So she is bringing in lawyers after lawyers after. I mean, it's really interesting.
Hmm.
I think
I will check
part
it out.
Six. Yeah. I haven't listened to the six yet, the last one that's out. I don't know if there's more planning, but she always does a great job. So,
well, thank you, Dr.
Definitely
Jules.
Definitely suggest Dr. Jules doing
this.
We'll
be checking that out. Mm-hmm. That's good. All right. This all up right now, Jen. And remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
You want to clap it? Clap it, clap. You got the clap? You want to clap?
Yep.
Ready?
Let's clap.
Cool about today,
oops,
and I
sorry.
This, is that we have the director.
What the
gone,
fuck? I grabbed my phone and I must have hit something. I have no idea. Well, fairy tales always have a bad stepmother, right?
Well, they always have a villain too, right?
Hmm. Or an octopus.
Claire no.
Sure. Ursula.
Claire no. I know. Or a Dalmatian fur coat. Judiciously? Yeah, right? Judicially. Why do I put big words in here when you know I can't read them?
I have
them?
No idea.
But this is taken from his actual confession. That's why.
Sorry. You can cut that cough out.
Keep it in, Nico. Keep it in.
Attractive.